Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody had a safe and happy weekend. We got a lot to get to. So it was very interesting for the last couple days. And I know there was some stories that broke that were pretty big, and we'll get to those later on in the roundup later on this week. So it's going to be an interesting roundup for this week. But let's talk about today. And I thought there were some interesting stories that needed to be not only addressed, but brought to the forefront. So one of the first ones, and everybody is a fan of his, at least that I know of, whether it's television or it's feature films, and that's Aaron Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin has been a mainstay in the Hollywood community for the past, I would say, 30 years. But it's very interesting because actually he came out, you know, just the other day and said that he had a stroke last November. So before Camelot rehearsals. So, you know, he's done theater too. So if you don't know Aaron Sorkin, of course, was the architect behind a lot of the good movies that you know or maybe have heard of, such as A Few Good Men, The Social Network, my personal favorite, Steve Jobs, The American President, and so on. But it's just fascinating. So here's, according to Deadline, he says that Aaron Sorkin, whose adaptation of Camelot opens on Broadway next month, revealed that he had suffered a stroke last November. Quote, this is what he said. Mostly it was a loud wake-up call, he said in an interview with the New York Times. I thought I was one of those people who could eat whatever he wanted, smoke as much as he wanted, and it's not going to affect me. Boy, was I wrong. The West Wing creator and To Kill a Mockingbird adaptor has largely recovered from the incident, which he said happened in November, 2 months before Camelot rehearsals were scheduled to begin. Sorkin says he woke up one night and on his way to the kitchen stumbled to the walls. The next morning, he noticed he was having difficulty holding his orange juice without spilling it. After a doctor visit that day, his doctor told him that his blood pressure was so high that he was, quote, supposed to be dead, end quote. The 61-year-old Sorkin slurred his words and had difficulty typing for a month, but his lingering symptoms are now his inability to taste food. He says, let me make this very, very clear. I'm fine. I wouldn't want anyone to think that I can't work. I'm fine. So Sorkin has a long-standing smoking habit after the stroke, has improved his diet and exercise routines. I take a lot of medicine. You can hear the pills rattling in me. Times reporter Michael Paulson writes that Sorkin mentioned the stroke in passing and initially asked the disclosure to be off the record. Sorkin has subsequently changed his mind and agreed to go public with the information. If this gets one person stop smoking, then it'll be helpful. Well, first and foremost, thank goodness he's okay, because he's one hell of a person. I've not met the man myself, but just from his creative juices and his genius, he is just a fabulous, fabulous writer. I would hate to see anything happen to him. As I said, he's done a lot of great work. Going back to what I was saying earlier, The West Wing, which people really, that's what was really his first shot into television. Of course, you have Steve Jobs, A Few Good Men, Moneyball, The Social Network, all critically acclaimed films. His writing is just amazing. The American President, I could go on and on and on. It's just, he is an amazing writer. I think he's a top tier writer. He's one of the best writers we have in Hollywood today. And anything you see done by Aaron Sorkin, you know it's going to be good. You just know it. Whether a lot of people like it or not, that's to be determined. It's just the way he writes. And by the way, if anybody has it, and I'm not sponsored by it, but if anybody has it, go check out his masterclass. I loved it. It was insightful. It was interesting. He walks you through his process. Unbelievable. But I'm really glad he's okay. And I'm glad that he's starting to, he's almost fully recovered and he's getting back to be healthy again. And if this is what it takes, in a wake-up call, to have this happen, then so be it. I mean, sometimes that's what it takes before you really, hit a wall and say, okay, I can't do this anymore. So I'm really happy that he's okay. And, I hope that he, it looks like Camelot's going to be his next thing. I hope he gets back to writing feature films very soon. I'm really, really happy that he's okay. And, but what do you guys think? So what things of Aaron Sorkin do you like? Do you like his feature films, like A Few Good Men or Steve Jobs or Moneyball? Or do you particularly like The West Wing? Was that something that you really enjoyed? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So staying on the topic of writers. So in the past, I would say 3 to 4 months, AI has really taken, as we all know, artificial intelligence is one of those things that is, of course, there was a Steven Spielberg movie many, many years ago called AI, Artificial Intelligence, with Haley Joel Osment. But it's taking a very interesting turn. And now you can do things with AI that you couldn't do even 5 years ago. And so, according to Variety, the WGA, or the Writers Guild of America, would actually allow artificial intelligence in script writing. And, as long as the writers maintain credit. So this comes from Variety. The Writers Guild of America has proposed allowing artificial intelligence to write scripts as long as it does not affect writers' credit or residuals. The guild had previously indicated that it would propose regulating the use of AI in the writing process, which has recently surfaced as a concern for writers who fear losing their jobs. But contrary to some expectation, the guild is not proposing an outright ban on the AI technology. Instead, the proposal would allow a writer to use ChatGPT to help a script without having to share writing credit or divide residuals. Or a studio executive could hand the writer an AI-generated script to rewrite or polish, and the writer would still be considered the first writer of the project. In effect, the proposal would treat AI as a tool, like Final Draft or a pencil, rather than a writer. It appears to be intended to allow writers to benefit from the technology without getting dragged into credit arbitrations with software manufacturers. The proposal does not address the scenario in which an AI program writes a script entirely on its own without help from a person. The Guild's proposal was discussed in the first bargaining session on Monday with the Alliance of Motion Pictures Television Producers. Three sources confirmed the proposal. It's not yet clear whether the AMPTP, which represents the studios, would be receptive to the idea. The WGA proposal states simply that AI-generated material will not be considered, quote, literary material or, quote, source material, end quote. Those terms are key for assigning writing credits, which in turn have a big impact on residual compensation. Literary material is a fundamental term in the WGA's basic agreement. It's what a, quote, writer, end quote, produces, including stories, treatments, screenplays, dialogue, sketches, etc. If an AI program cannot produce literary material, then it cannot be considered a writer on the project. Source material refers to these things like novels, plays, or magazine articles on which a screenplay may be based, so essentially like an adapted screenplay. If a screenplay is based on source material, then it is not considered, quote, an original screenplay, end quote. The writer may also get a screenplay by credit rather than a written by credit. A written by credit entitles the writer to the full residual for the project, while a screen by credit only gets 75%. By declaring that ChatGPT cannot write, quote, source material, end quote, the Guild would be saying that a writer could adapt an AI short story and still get full, quote, written by credit. Some scenarios may be far-fetched, but technological advances can present some of the thorniest issues in bargaining, as neither side want to concede some advantage that may be consequential in future years. AI could also be used to help write questions on Jeopardy or other quiz show audience participation shows. SAG, AFTRA, have also raised concerns about the effect on AI and performers, notably around losing control of their image, voice, and likeness. The WGA is set bargaining for the next 2 weeks before reporting back to members on the next steps and a potential strike. The contract expires on May 1st. Okay, let's talk about this. This is a big thing. This is a big, big, big thing. because essentially what you're wanting there is you want bots, okay, to come up with ideas. When the human element is taken away, and this is what we were just talking about Aaron Sorkin a minute ago. Aaron Sorkin is one of those guys that is an amazing writer. And whether it's an adapted screenplay, like A Few Good Men, or an original, okay, he knows what he's doing. And this is why it takes years and years and years to craft a screenplay. That being said, I think that when you start to have artificial intelligence, I'm not going to say take over, assist, okay? That loses the human element of it. And I think that you have to ask yourself, at what point do, look, all you got to do is give them an inch and they'll take a mile. I'm not saying it's immediate, but it will be soon. Okay. That being said, I can't see the WGA, which, by the way, I mean, you know, it's hard enough to actually get your show made. I can't see them actually saying, oh, sure, you know. Now, in the article, it states, and this is the difference between, you know, if it is a tool, okay, if they can come up with basic guidelines. And I'll give you an example. If they can come up with a character, okay, that is, let's say, a male in his 40s, brown hair, brown eyes, okay, fine. Let the writer then turn around and fill in the blanks, okay? What kind of body frame does this person have? Do they... you know, do they smoke? Do they drink? Do they, you know, do they like sports? Do they, you know, fill in the background information. If you want to just have it for that, that's fine. Now, let me be clear. I have no problem with quiz shows using AI. No problem. Okay? Absolutely no problem. Because, like, Jeopardy is a perfect example. Because they are coming up with thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of questions or answers or to the questions. That's fine. Okay? If you want to have this on game shows, okay, that's cool. As long as it's not going to predetermine the results. Okay? But beyond that, I have no problem with that. When we get into to an area, a gray area, that an AI, okay, you know, let's say it's ChatGPT, can actually start to create complete and total scripts. What do we do? I mean, we obviously, it's not going to have the same amount of detail as, let's say, an Aaron Sorkin, or, you know, pick any other good writer you want. But where does it, I mean, because essentially, okay, you're taking away jobs from the writers. And I don't understand how the WGA would even want this. Now, as let me be clear once again, okay? Let me be crystal clear. I have no problem this is a tool. If they want to use this as a tool, fine. That's great. But when we get into the problem of full scripts, that's when I really have to start worrying about, is AI going to really start to be that big of a deal throughout the industry? And the other question you have to ask too is, how does this change the industry, right? How does this change basically, how does this change the industry? Because if you're not having humans do it, then it's not going to be worth it. I don't want to watch a movie that was written by a friggin' robot. I don't. I want to watch somebody, you know, painstakingly write a script, and it gets rewrite after rewrite after rewrite. Can you imagine a Quentin Tarantino script that was done by a bot? I kid, but there's a possibility that this could really damage the industry. And look, if you're going to have people as frivolous as suing over trailers because a certain person or a certain image is not in a trailer, and that could legitimately change how movie studios create and sculpt movie trailers, you're telling me that it's okay that we have a bot or artificial intelligence writing full scripts? Give me a break. So, once again, going back to what I was saying, I think that what you have to do, okay, is use this as a tool. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it's used and why it's used, right? Because I know the WGA, I don't know personally, obviously, there's multiple sources, but they don't want this. And I don't blame them, because eventually they're going to be out of a job. And it's hard enough to get, you know, full credit as it is. So, anyways, it's a fascinating topic. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to be hearing much more about this in the future. What do you guys think? Do you think AI should be used in creation of movies, television, streaming shows? If so, how do you think it should be used, and why? Would you give the writers full credit no matter what? Leave your thoughts down in the comments. I'm really, really fascinated to hear this. Okay, so let's move on to our next story. And so one of the things I've said for years and years is Hollywood loves fads. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be war movies. It could be, you know, I don't know, boxing movies. I mean, you take a look at like the last 10 years, you had Creed, you had South Park, you had all of these other movies come out, Hands of Stone. All these movies come out at once because they were successful. So fads are, I mean, all you do is take a look at the musical biopics in the last 10 years. We've had Judy, we've had Rocket Man, we've had Bohemian Rhapsody, we've had, you know, all of Elvis. We've had all these pictures because they're successful, right? So there is another fad starting in Hollywood right now. And it is Gladiator movies. And you say, huh? Gladiator movies? What? So anybody who's not too familiar with it, a few months ago, Ridley Scott came out and said he is going to be doing a sequel to the 2000 Best Picture winner Gladiator. And he's got some heavy hitters on this. Okay? He's got Paul Mescal, Academy Award nominee. He's got Denzel Washington, Academy Award nominee. And he's going to be directing this. So the reason I bring this up is because The Hollywood Reporter came out with a piece today. And it said, Gladiators are back. Hollywood readies three rival projects. Do you like movies about gladiators? Hollywood is betting you do. There is a trio of sword and sandal epics in the works, including a long-awaited sequel to the Ridley Scott Oscar-winning 2000 movie Gladiator and a reboot of Starz's groundbreaking television series Spartacus. The curious surge of ancient Rome titles in the pipeline seems to be purely coincidental, but it also makes sense given the studios have been searching for the next genre title that might break out, particularly since the end of the HBO's Game of Thrones. And given the revival of another muscular old-time Hollywood genre, the Western, following the explosive popularity of Yellowstone, each project has roots in a different take on the material, and the two projects have had major casting news in the last week. The gladiator genre is actually at cinemas dating all the way back to the 1913 silent film, Last Days of Pompeii. The films hit their popularity zenith in the early 1960s, in the wake of the 1959 blockbuster Ben-Hur and Stanley Kubrick's 1960 film Spartacus, nearly 40 films, including featuring gladiators, were released between 1961 to 1964, according to IMDb. That's crazy to even think about. 40 films. The movies were mostly low-budget efforts, and most of them were produced in Italy and dubbed for American audiences, just like the better-known spaghetti western genre. Here are the three projects that likewise have a, quote, dream that was Rome. So as I made mention, the untitled Gladiator project, okay, that is the first one. We really don't know what that's about. We know who's going to be in it, okay? Then we have 3 Days to Die. So this is being done by Roland Emmerich, who did in Independence Day. I'm sorry. So what it's about, the project is based on Danny Mannix's nonfiction book, which has researched the reality of gladiator combat. Those About to Die is described as a, quote, epic drama set in the complex and corrupt world of ancient Rome's spectacle-driven gladiator competition. So as I said, Roland Emmerich is directing the project. And so you have Anthony Hopkins, who's a major player that's going to be in this. And then you have some other notable names in there as well. So, and that's going to be coming out 2024. And then Spartacus. Spartacus, as I said earlier, the revival of Spartacus and, you know, what that's going to do. And so this is going to be the second time they're actually coming back with this. And, yeah. So, as I said before, fads are a mainstay in Hollywood. It doesn't matter if it's boxing. It doesn't matter if it's gladiators. It doesn't matter what it, you know, biopics, musical biopics. This is what, if it is it very successful, they're going to be doing it. Yeah, and I'm really interested to see what transpires. This is the one, though. I mean, obviously, I think the Gladiator Project, 23 years after the fact, or going to be 24 when it comes out, that's the one I'm really fascinated in. It's got a huge cast. You've got Ridley Scott behind the camera. It won Best Picture. It garnered over 10 Academy Award nominations. I'm really fascinated to see that. But yeah, it's always interesting to see when movies hit, like, how big is it going to be? And are fans going to really be accepting of it? I think that's something else, too. has it been too long for the Gladiator sequel? I don't know. We'll have to find out. But anyways, guys, do you like Gladiator movies? If so, which ones do you like? Which one are you looking forward to the most? Are you interested in the new Gladiator movie coming out next year? Or not so much? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments, and I will get back to everybody. Okay, for the last story of the day, this is the one everybody's looking forward to, right? It's one of those, you know, we've got a ton of movies coming out. And this weekend is no exception. This week is absolutely no exception. We have another fantastic movie coming out. And it was actually at South by Southwest. And that's John Wick 4. This is one of those films that I've not seen any of the John Wick movies. I just never got around to it. But everybody is saying, David, you need to watch John Wick. So this is going to, this actually premiered at South by Southwest and to rave reviews. And so I'm really curious to see how this does. So according to Variety, it's targeting a huge $70 million weekend. John Wick Chapter 4 is aiming to set a new franchise record in its box office debut. The fourth installment in Lionsgate's action thriller series, led by Keanu Reeves as a legendary assassin, looks to collect a mighty $65 to $70 million from 3,800 North American theaters over the weekend. The movie also debuts this weekend in 71 territories at the international box office. By Sunday, ticket sales should climb to at least $100 to $115 million worldwide. It's impressive that each film in the John Wick franchise has managed to dramatically improve upon its predecessor at the box office, beginning with the 2014's John Wick, which made $14 million at the opening weekend. 2017's John Wick Chapter 2 made $30.5 million its opening weekend. The 2019 John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum made $56.8 million opening weekend. So Chapter 4 is earning some of the best reviews of all of already well-received pack and should continue the trend. It cost more than $100 million to produce, giving it its highest price tag in the series. Parabellum is currently the highest grossing installment in its franchise, with $328.3 million globally. The first movie tapped out at $86.1 million, but became a sleeper hit on home entertainment when the sequel ended its run with $174.3 million. As long as momentum stays, Chapter 4 hopes to be the biggest earner of the four by the time it leaves theaters. Regardless of its box office performance, a spinoff called Ballerina, end quote, starring Ana de Armas, is already in the works. Except for Shazam Fury of the Gods, it's been a standout march at the box office, with new entries of Scream and Creed also establishing opening weekend benchmarks in its respective series. John Wick 4 is the only new nationwide release, so it won't have a problem overtaking Shazam 2 as the number one movie on domestic charts. Chad Stetherin directed the latest John Wick, which follows the hitman as he continues his fight against a powerful crime organization known as the High Table. On his journey, he seeks out the most powerful players in the underworld, from New York to Paris to Japan to Berlin. Along with Reeves, the cast includes Donnie Yen, Bill Skarsgård, Lawrence Fishburne, and of course the late Lance Reddick, which we just lost him last week, who died at the age of at 60. And Variety's chief film critic praised the fourth one, which clocked in an overstuffed 2 hours and 49 minutes, knowing it's knowingly overstuffed gift to fans. So, and then there were a couple of reviews behind it. Okay, let's talk about it. As I said, I've not seen any of the John Wick movies. I know, crazy, huh? And the other thing is, this franchise is 10 years old. Like, what? Man, that's crazy. Forget about that. Nonetheless, this looks like it's going to be huge. And it's going to absolutely crush Shazam. It only made $30 million last weekend. That's a whole other story in itself we'll have to do sometime. But we'll do it on the roundup. But it's just amazing to me that this is a movie that continues to get bigger and better. Now, I got to be honest. 2 hours and 48 minutes to me seems a little long. But if the action's good, I'm in for it, okay? The other thing, too, is in the last few, I'd say 3-4 years, we've had a lot of movies that are almost tapping out at 3 hours. I mean, you've got Endgame, you've got Babylon, you've got, Avatar, The Way of Water. This is at 248, Infinity War a couple of years ago. So people like longer movies if they're good for the franchise. If they're not, then I don't think they will be. I'm really curious to see how much this makes opening weekend and how much it can sustain. I think that this is going to be fun. I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those movies I probably would have to watch all three just to get caught up. I don't know. We'll see. I'm regardless, though, March has been a huge month. You've had Creed 3 come out at the beginning of the month. Then you had Scream, a couple weeks ago. Shazam didn't do so hot, and there's some backstory behind that. But this is looking to be big. And I can't wait to see what transpires. And how much can this sustain? We've got, after that, in a couple weeks, we're going to have Air. And we're going to have Super Mario Brothers. And, we've got a ton of stuff. So it will be interesting to see what happens and how much, it's interesting because Keanu Reeves is like that one star that just keeps going. I mean, if you take a look at this, it's interesting, right? Because when Taken really was that hit back in the day, Liam Neeson was that character that really, he was that action hero everybody was talking about, right? It was Taken. It was Taken 2. It was Taken 3. It was The Commuter. It was The Gray. It was Run All Night. It was all these films. And then, he had that, he stumbled. He said something he really wasn't supposed to. And it killed his career. And now he's doing B and C movies. This has been, Keanu Reeves is now that new action hero. I mean, we still have Tom Cruise. That I'm not disputing that, okay? Mission 7's coming out in July, and it's going to be huge. But this is the next big thing, right? And now that it's going all over the world, I think that's something else to be, to consider. He's going all over the world. Japan, Berlin, Paris, all these places. It's really interesting to see. So I'm going to have to sit down at some point and watch the John Wick movies because everybody is telling me they're fantastic. And I need to do it. That's one of the things I need to do. What do you guys think? Are you looking forward to John Wick 4? Have you seen all the other John Wicks? If so, what did you think of them? Are you going to go back and see all of these other are you going to watch all the other John Wicks before you go see John Wick 4? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so that's all we got for today. It's one of those things where we have a lot of stuff coming up and I've, said it ad nauseum. So I'm not going to really repeat it all that much. But let's put it this way, guys. There's a lot of stuff coming up on the channel. And I actually have... So you guys are going to be the first ones to find out. I've had a Patreon for about a year. I never got it reestablished. So I was doing a couple of different shows, and I'm considering putting those on Patreon. So a couple months ago, I asked you guys what, you know, I put a poll out there. What would be your best, if you were going to subscribe to a Patreon, what would be your levels? So you guys gave me a couple, of answers. So what we're going to do is we're going to go $4, $7, and $15. So $4, okay. So there were three series, okay. We have Mob Mondays, we have Rewatch Wednesdays, and we have Flashback Fridays. What we're going to do, I'm considering doing this. Mob Mondays, okay, that is going to be the $4. So if you go and actually subscribe to Patreon and you want to do the $4 level, you'll be able to watch every single Monday. You'll be able to do a Mob Monday. You'll be helping me out supporting the channel. Now, if you go to the $7 channel or $7 tier, you will get two. You will get the Mob Mondays and the Rewatch Wednesdays. And the Rewatch Wednesdays are films I've seen and I haven't seen in a while. We go back and dissect them and talk about them. Okay? So you'll get two. And once again, you'll be supporting me on the channel. And if you do the $15 tier, the highest tier, because I want to make it cheap enough for everybody to have access to, you're going to get access to all three. Okay? Mob Mondays, Rewatch Wednesdays, and Flashback Fridays. Now, I started Flashback Fridays as a podcast, and I was doing the Marvel movies. And my guest at the time, my co-host at the time, and I were going through every single Marvel movie in chronological order. And that's what we're going to do. So we're going to go through every single Marvel movie in chronological order. And that way you'll get access to all three of the shows. So I think that's what we're going to do. I'm trying to get this up for April. We'll see about that. And yeah. Yeah, so that will be interesting to see. And that's about it. So I don't have anything else for you. But do the three things you need to do. Be careful, be safe, and have a great rest of the day. I'm David Steele, and this has been Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.